You know, I spoke with Nikhil. Did he have a good game? Yes, he did. That one play overshadowed the production that he did have. He would be the first person to tell you that he knows that's unacceptable.
Dale Arnold.
But you're going to need Kemba Walker to play better. With Jason Tatum, you simply need him to finish.
But we need to handle it better.
You could see it. They heart start pumping Kool-Aid.
Rich Key.
Very disappointed, and we're on to Carolina now.
We're on to Cincinnati.
But they are who we thought they were.
Dale and Keefe with Andy Hart.
Not that I know anything about wind currents or, you know, meteorology or anything here.
On the WEEI Sports Radio Network.
I guess the big question is, does Rich Keefe's heart start pumping craft beer at about 6:30 tonight?
Yes. Well,
yes.
6:30,
okay.
6:30 seems a little late, Bill.
Well, I was just. Yeah, you're right. You know. You could give it a go at like 2:10.
Yeah, it's getting dark early around. Earlier now.
Oh, is that a rule? The earlier it gets dark, the earlier you can drink.
Never heard him before.
My point is, I like a nice day drink, and so,
so you're gonna
squeeze
it in.
Yeah, you gotta hurry up and get home. Okay. That's the point.
Eclipse is drunk by 6 a.m.
Yes.
You need to do first, what I do is McDonald's starts serving lunch at 10:30 a.m. Therefore, you can start drinking at 10:30 a.m.
No, that's real. He told me that when he tweeted out a photo while on vacation at like 10:30.
So 10:30 is the rules of mankind.
That is lunch.
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. I'm fairly certain he started drinking at 10:30 a.m. yesterday too.
That's
just based on how the show went. I'm just saying it was possible.
He had his moments. He had his moments. He was fine.
And by the way, I'm fairly certain John was drinking with him yesterday too.
Yeah, it was not John's best.
It was
I had an IV in with like some whiskey in it.
Kind of on par for John.
Straight into the veins.
Sounds like I missed quite a show yesterday.
Yeah, oh, it got a little
good stuff.
Little owly at times.
Well, you worked in Bluedale early.
Well, not as bad as Rob Gronkowski's new commercial, but...
Oh, where are his balls?
Bull roasted.
Now, I did tweet it out, and I just suggested that there might be some commercials I might not choose to be a part of. I'd say Gronk's new spot is one of those, but, you know...
How come? What's the problem?
They pay me.
I was going to say, they pay him. Whatever. He's in there with his girlfriend's in the
He learned it from Tom.
She's probably getting paid.
If Tom talks about Doritos, then Gronk can talk about his balls.
Although, you know, I've seen that commercial again. There are no Doritos, no Lay's products anywhere in the room. It's Tom sitting on his bed polishing his new Tampa Bay Buccaneers helmet. You don't see chips. There are none in the shot. He obviously isn't eating chips. It's like, all right, I'll be a part of it, but I can't be near any of those things.
But it is a commercial for Doritos and Tostitos.
No, I know.
Okay, so he can't deny anything.
He sold out on that.
He's literally the only person who appears in the commercial who doesn't have a chip near him.
But that's so one, maybe that lets him sleep at night, but you're still a hypocrite fraud.
That one's weird, but that one's where you're like, all right, you're taking money from a product that you probably don't enjoy.
I bet you Gronk
uses this product 100%. Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that, Dale.
No, it's fine.
It's waterproof, too.
Apparently, you can drop it right in her pitcher of margaritas or something.
It's a little gross.
I wouldn't use that.
No.
I wouldn't drink from that
picking things out of your teeth later.
So for those who missed it, Gronk was doing a Manscaped commercial with his girlfriend. And it's like, you've seen him before. They've had commercials before. I've never seen one with a professional athlete in it.
No.
But pretty good job by Gronk. I'm sure he's getting some money there. His girlfriend's getting some money. It's a win-win.
I always think, by the way, that they always get less than we think they're getting. Like, we always think, oh, they're getting millions. And I mean, I'm sure he gets, you know, a fair chunk of money for it, but it's probably not as much as you think it
is. And that's what I brought up with the Tostitos commercial. Yeah. They had all these guys. They can't all be making a boatload of money.
Yeah,
it's just a Doritos commercial in the middle of the season or beginning of the season. So I'd like to find out, though, Dale. I'd hide behind a bush and...
Of course.
Do whatever they asked me to do for...
Why not?
So you think he got $100,000?
Babe, have you seen my balls?
Subtlety is Gronk's thing.
Oh, yeah. Captain Subtle. That's Rob Gronkowski is Captain Subtle, isn't he?
That's a nice setup, though.
She's also a little overdressed to be sitting out by the pool, isn't she?
Behind your overgrown shaggy bush, my love.
Analyzed this, huh, Dale? She's overdressed. You don't know if you...
He's underdressed.
Yeah, a lot of criticisms there. Maybe they're, you know, they were going to have a catch. That's why he's looking for his balls.
What's the product? The lawnmower 3.0?
That's what they call it.
Yeah, does that mean it's like a stronger version?
It must be.
I don't know.
I think it's just updated.
Yeah. Oh, because when you call it a lawnmower, it feels like a little extra power.
It sounds like you're
sharper.
Sounds like you can really go a while without using it if it's called a lawnmower.
Well, it's for his big bushy.
I mean, it depends how fast the grass grows.
Yes.
Also
Shed
true.
Travel bag.
Sweet sassy molassy. I found my balls.
Sweet sassy molassy. That was just a rip job from Ray Romano on SNL. You got to give him a little bit of money for that.
Do you think Gronk ad-libbed this baby? Because yeah,
I think that was written.
I know, yeah, but I'm saying they. I'm not saying Gronk owes him money. I'm
ripped
saying,
off Ray Romano.
He did.
Sweet sassy molassy.
Well, whatever.
Did you
it
not
takes.
See the SNL bit, that which Kermit? Is one of the greatest things of all time?
Yeah, was that Kermit the Frog chiming in?
Some people have like they're like you know like a 200 batting average. John's when it comes to turning the mic on,
JD Martinez
way below, like way below the Mendoza line. None of it's good.
Yeah,
none of it.
Shut up, Meg.
Yeah, but he's like Sandy Leone.
Has he reached the point where he's so unfunny it becomes funny?
Not yet.
Not yet.
I'm no, waiting for wait, that
we're
day.
We're kind of waiting for that. There. Yeah,
I was still investing time.
I would love that day to happen, but it's not today.
Yeah, that's nope. Too bad.
Don't be afraid to bring that baby out. Yep. A couple of things here as we start talking Patriots. And I heard you bring this up, Rich, when you were talking to Greg and Wiggy. Cam Newton yesterday was talking about, you know, his important young wide receiver, N'Keal Harry. And I mean, I heard it yesterday and I thought, wow, that sounds different than what we heard Tom Brady say on the Howard Stern show. It certainly, you know, I'm sure resonated differently within the Patriots locker room. Let's hear Cam Newton yesterday talking specifically about N'Keal Harry's mistake, his fumble in Sunday's win here at Gillette.
You know, I spoke with N'Keal. Let's just put a lot of things into perspective here, right? Did he have a good game? Yes, he did. That one play overshadowed the production that he did have. He bailed me out on a play on a kind of inaccurate pass that he came down with and got the first down. He did pretty good in the run game. You know, he had a couple contested catches. You know, all that was kind of for naught because a lot of people just focused on the fumble. And granted, I'll be the first person to tell you he knows, or he will be the first person to tell you that he knows that's unacceptable. But obviously, when you just put things into perspective and you call a apple an apple and a spade, it was just one mistake.
Incredible. Incredible. Now, I don't believe
it's like you,
most
you
of
would
it.
Want, you would want your team leader and quarterback to talk about a mistake one of your players made.
Well, especially after one game, and he knows that based on the roster right now, and we can get into potential of them, you know, adding anybody else, but right now, this is what you have. And N'Keal Harry was a first-round pick coming off a injury-riddled season, which was kind of a nothing season. Week one has a couple of catches, also a big fumble, and Cam Newton's not going to bury him because what does that do? What does that accomplish? And so if N'Keal Harry feels like even after that game, he has the confidence in his quarterback, or at least publicly he's got the confidence of his quarterback, that's great. That's how you should do it if you're Cam Newton.
So let me ask you a question. Is this a version of trickle-down coaching? And I ask it because haven't we talked a lot about Bill and the Teddy Bruschi comments and building Cam Newton up? You don't need to tear him down. He's a different guy. We need to build him up before the hammer comes and the hard coaching. And maybe that's Cam doing the same thing with his guy, N'Keal Harry. Now, I do think it's interesting the way he went into a long-winded answer about, even in Carolina, I had a N'Keal Harry every year. And he started listing all the guys that were there with him. And sort of, and we can hear that now as he listed the guys that he had to develop as young players over his career with the Panthers.
I've had a N'Keal in my life for as long as my career has existed, being a high-invested draft pick dating back to Kelvin Benjamin, to Devin Funches. Then you invest in Curtis Samuel, DJ Moore, Christian McCaffrey. It's nothing new to come on a team and you have a young talent at receiver and trying to morph him into the best player that he could possibly be. And I know N'Keal's buying in not only to my theory and methods, but also to the team as well. And you know, plays like that are going to happen. We just hope that that's the only time it will happen.
So his positivity, sure, it may just be his natural leadership style. He's been down this road before.
And he does seem to be, you know, kind of an optimistic, positive kind of guy. But so did Brady until he didn't like a mistake that you made at wide receiver.
I mean, it's just I'm a quarterback, so, you know, I don't make those decisions, and I'm fun, you know, who's ever out there, that's who I got to play with. So.
Yeah. Yeah. See, Brady said he was about positivity. It's whatever. Brady always told us he was about positivity.
Oh, but Cam is.
There seemed to be a lot of negativity around Brady.
Tons of negativity, and I think also, you know, and maybe this would happen to other quarterbacks. You know, if Cam Newton, for the first 6 years of his career, let's say, was surrounded by Devin Funchess and, you know, Corey Brown and those guys, and then year seven, he gets Randy Moss, Wes Welker, and Dante Stallworth, and then maybe when you take those guys away, you're like, well, wait a minute. This is what it could have been. But there's one of the things that we said when Cam first signed here was, all right, look at the receivers and just the skill position group that he has here and compare it to the best and worst ones that he had in Carolina. And it wasn't like you were taking Jameis Winston out of Tampa Bay and be like, oh, yeah, we don't have a Mike Evans or a Chris Godwin, right, or an O.J. Howard or a Cameron Brate. Or, like, we don't have those guys. So Cam's more used to it. And when that the list of names that he rattled off there, some of those players are very good. Like Christian McCaffrey's very good. He'd be very good for everybody. Calvin Benjamin, Cam Newton got the most out of him when he could. And Devin Funchess, he got the most out of him when he could. Those guys weren't great. In fact, you're hoping that N'Keal Harry's an even better player than those guys. And yet Cam didn't write him off because he was like, this is who the team invested in. This is who's out there. So I got to make the best of what I have.
He needs and part of that, too, I think, was the injury report that came out yesterday. Because we're talking after the game on Sunday, did it seem like Julian Edelman was on a bit of a pitch count? You know, he had fewer offensive snaps than both N'Keal Harry and Damier Byrd. And all of a sudden yesterday, Edelman is limited at practice with, quote-unquote, a knee. And now is it also possible that Cam Newton's going, look, I don't even know what I'm going to get out of that guy who's, you know, my top wide receiver from Sunday. I better buck up this guy and make sure he's ready to go.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably a real microscopic look at it. I think he's looking bigger picture. I need N'Keal Harry next week, next month.
Oh, yeah.
Moving forward. Like, he is a key part of our offense. Because the Edelman thing is a little weird to me. He didn't start, so it looked like they had sort of a certain vision in what the offense was going to be in the opener. Then he's back there on the second punt, a role that Bill has openly talked about not wanting him necessarily back there too often on punts.
But
you
also got the sense they didn't want him to catch anything and run with anything.
Right. So you, and then he wasn't on the injury report last week, so it's not like he didn't start and was on a pitch count in the opener because of the injury that was building up. But we did see him get monitored throughout camp. He even talked about that. You know, how it's sort of weird. He's never really had that feeling where they were kind of picking their spots and limiting his reps. So I'm not sure what to make of the, you know, second week in injury report knee issue. And I don't want to blow it up, but it also bears monitoring because all we all said was he's a 38-year-old slot receiver coming off a year in which he got the crap kicked out of him.
And he gets the crap kicked out of him every single game he plays.
He's right.
38.
I mean, 34. Did I say 38?
Yeah, you did.
Sorry, that was football years.
It might as well be 48.
I cut him open years. And the ring said 38.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't want to overreact to it, but you're right, Dale. If he is limited, if Cam knows, yeah, we might not have Edelman every snap. He's not my go-to guy. Well, who the hell is my go-to guy? N'Keal Harry.
I think it's pretty alarming. Even if these particular injuries might not be the most significant, it's week two, and Harry and Edelman are already on the injury report.
Yep.
Harry missed half the season last year, and you weren't really sure what you were going to get, and it was a couple different things, too, that put him out. And then Edelman
had a head growing out of his shoulder, according to Andy.
Yes, he had been fighting it all along.
Aliens.
That's the nature of the position or the way he plays, too. And after that, who do you have? Damier Byrd and Jacoby Myers?
Yeah.
Anybody else? Like that's it.
Bueller.
That's the
don't
group.
Even have Bueller. Devin Asiasi.
You don't
he did
even
not
have
nothing.
Lacoste and N'Keal Harry.
Lacoste.
Yeah, Lacoste's not going to get it done.
Can we delve into the comment a little bit deeper beyond Cam supporting and propagating sort of N'Keal Harry? Did N'Keal Harry have a good game?
I don't think he did.
I don't either.
But I don't think Cam Newton would ever tell you that he didn't.
Yeah, I also think he's just trying to say, look, it wasn't the disaster it's being portrayed in some places either.
No,
the truth is in the middle somewhere.
I don't know. I think I'm closer to disaster.
I think he was pretty bad. I thought, obviously, the fumble, even if you take the fumble out, which is a turnover, which Bill hates, and if it was Ridley, right, he would never play again. But just everything else, so not smooth to me.
No, the swing pass where he got run over by a defensive back despite a 10-yard run-up.
Cam didn't mention that.
No idea what that was. No, absolutely no idea.
He looked like a guy trying to avoid contact.
He did.
He looked like he was protecting something.
That's where I get into, I think the shoulder was probably a factor in that, which means,
well, it's a problem.
It's a significant factor.
Yeah,
if it's affecting what he does and what he's thinking about on the field,
it's an issue.
But then I would even go to our number one pick in year two has 5 catches for 38 yards, whatever it is.
39, 8 or 9. Yeah,
7
yeah.
or you right. know, oh, not even yards 8 yards catches, a catch?
No.
Like, what? I mean, I'm supposed to call that a good game?
Not at
and
all.
He tried to throw in the running game, and he said he was pretty good on the run game.
He's fine.
So it already went backwards.
Yeah, because he's not the possession receiver. If you have a couple guys, like if Edelman averages 8 yards a catch for a game, you're like, okay,
James
that's 100%. I mean, N'Keal Harry, I'm thinking maybe a little bit more than that.
Double digits at least,
please.
617-779. 877-973-7 is the telephone number. Peter King will join us at 11:30 today, our buddy from Football Morning in America. We've got our fantasy football segment, and we'll pick the Thursday night football game coming up at 11:45. When we come back, Tom Curran posed a question yesterday on the program when he appeared with us. I want to get Andy Hart's take on this as well. It's Dale and Keefe with Andy Hart, and it's time to trend.
Andy Hart is with Dale and Keefe every Tuesday and Thursday on WEEI.
I wonder if they're once bitten, twice shy. I find it hard to believe that in this year of, look, let's get the books balanced and get back right and stop chasing that last piece that'll help Tom win a championship, there might be a little bit more caution shown around the trade deadline, I think. That's a question we're going to be asking over the next couple months, guys. Mm-hmm. Is this a team that you are a buyer for at the trade deadline or a seller from? Too early to tell, but my guess would be you're not going to be a buyer.
Tommy Curran, NBC Sports Boston, was with us on the program yesterday, as he is every Wednesday, and kind of made the suggestion that the Patriots may be more likely sellers at the trade deadline than buyers. Andy, your thoughts?
My inclination is to go the other way, that they are more likely to be buyers. They've sort of already kind of reset the books. We know they have the cap space not only for this year, but moving forward. And my question would be, though, what type of buying are they doing? Is it
An impact wide receiver would be good.
But what I mean is it a rental where you're trying to get in the playoffs, you think you have a chance, whatever? Or is it, we're sitting pretty cap-wise, not only this year and next, we can acquire a guy that we think can be a part of this team for multiple years. Now, I know you went down that road a little bit with Mohamed Sanu, and that road was not very forgiving to you.
And Tom Curran called that once bitten, twice shy.
But I also, with all the young players on this team and all the new players, I think there's a chance by midseason you have a better idea of where you're going next year, where you're, you know, this guy can play, this guy, you know, did we fix tight end? Well, Devin Asiasi's looked good the last month and a half. Or, you know what, we might have missed on Dalton Keene or Damian Harris. Oh, J.J. Taylor is the next this. Mm-hmm. And they may have a better, Jacoby Myers, like any of these guys, N'Keal Harry, they could have a better feel for not only the short term, what they need to fix the 2020 team, but this young guy's never going to be a part of this team significantly moving forward, so we can acquire talent.
I also think the sport's different than, you know, certainly baseball, hockey, and basketball as it relates to teams that are true buyers or true sellers. Maybe even more so when you're talking about true sellers. Like, you don't see in the NFL all of a sudden deadline happens and let's get rid of all of our players that have value and that way we can get picks and stuff. It doesn't really work that way. So when Curran says, you know, he doesn't expect them to be buyers, that's also a different than, hey, let's trade Gilmore. Let's get rid of these guys and help out a team. That doesn't really happen. But I just think they normally are buyers. You could say, well, normally they have Tom Brady, but they're also...
They were always a Super Bowl contender every single year.
But I think that most people, and I know there are still some that think that this is a 8-8 or worse team out there. I don't know if Belichick feels that way. And if you think you can just even get into the playoffs, why wouldn't you try to help that team? Doesn't mean you're reckless and you trade your next 4 first-round picks for a guy or something like that. But to go out there and try to improve this team, I don't see why you wouldn't. And I know in that cut that we played from Curran, he talks about the salary cap for next year. Well, you can still help your team this year and not screw that up for next year. Or, you know what? You're still going to need a number one receiver next year. So if you get one that happens to be somewhat young, don't you check that box? So like, hey, you're helping your team now, but also that's no longer an issue for the next season.
And we've talked about that. That's been my theory all along, is that they're advantageous cap situation moving forward, and no one's real sure what the cap's going to be. We've heard 175, or could you be, you know, above that? But whatever, they're going to be sitting pretty. They're going to be as comfortable as almost any NFL team, whereas some teams could be $50, $60 million over the cap. And if those teams feel like they're falling out of the playoffs this year, and instead of cutting a guy next February or early March, you can trade him to the Patriots for a 4th-round pick and get something out of it while also getting his salary off your books. Isn't that helpful to that team? And you may benefit by having a budget. It's almost like a right time, right place. This year, they didn't have cap room. This year, it wasn't great for them. But next year, because of the way their books look, maybe you start the process in October, which would have really, you know, really picked up next March.
I guess part of it will also, and this is kind of an obvious point here to make, but won't it also depend on how they're doing at the point at that point?
Well, that's where I get into the two theories. It might not. If you're just doing this, there's a player that team wants to unload that we think has value moving forward. That may be regardless of this year's season. I mean, most teams feel like they're going to be in the playoff picture, right? With the extra playoff teams.
It is set up, yeah.
I mean, I can't envision the Patriots being a team that are just flat out October 14th out of postseason. I mean, some of the teams you thought would be, like Jacksonville, well, they already got a win. They're already 1-0. So some of those teams are going to hang around maybe a little longer. But so I don't know that the decision will be made necessarily for the current year as much as it a good player. Can we add a good player to the football team? We need a good player.
Well, they absolutely have a need for an impact wide receiver, don't they?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, maybe more than ever.
Yes. I mean, really, this desperation that we've talked about, desperation that goes back 3+ years now to Josh Gordon, and then you go down the road of Josh Gordon again, and then you go down the Antonio Brown road, and then you go down the whole
Demaryius Thomas at one point. Like,
it's always been like this need that they had, and they probably thought they filled it with N'Keal Harry. Like, okay, stop. We're going to stop doing this. We're going to stop going into
finally use the first round
wide receiver.
And still, you're in the same spot.
Yeah, you don't have DK Metcalf. Like, the guy they're facing this week, that's what N'Keal Harry should be. Good rookie year, and in his second year,
already primed.
Like, I hear Jason McCourty talking about, you know, we see this guy on tape, and he's either towering over the corner
he's beaten, or
he's blowing by the guy he's beaten.
He's like, a problem.
They have a big outside number one receiver that they took
in the second round
after N'Keal Harry.
Right. There's a whole list of guys that were drafted after N'Keal Harry who are very productive right now in the league.
The trade deadline is what? The end of October, right?
Yep.
I think there are five games remaining between now and then, and I think the Patriots are going to lose three of those five. Now, they may lose more than that, but three: Seattle, Kansas City, San Francisco. I don't feel good about it all.
So if you're 3-3, let's say, at the trade deadline, and then knowing that, you just mentioned it there, three of the best teams that you play are now off the schedule, and you're 3-3, well, what if the Bills are 4-2? To me, I'm buying. I'm going out there, and I'm trying to add to this team. And because I also think next year you're looking to be in a better spot, and that receiver that you get this year can only help then as well. Like, I don't want the guy necessarily that's just on the 1 year deal either, because you're going to be chasing it again. Now you're going to have to use what, another draft pick or an off season trade? Like, you might as well make that trade now. And also, you're going to have a decision to make on Cam Newton at the end of the year. Not this week, according to Wiggy, but I think by the end of the year, you're going to have a decision on Cam Newton. So why not surround him with the best pieces possible and see how it looks with a real guy? Like, let's say Allen Robinson, hypothetically, you get him in here and he and Cam really click. Doesn't that make it a little bit easier to bring Cam back and say, all right, this is what our offense could look like going forward?
Also probably makes life easier on everyone else.
100%.
Right? It's sort of like when you talk about Gordon Hayward. I don't really care what you think of Gordon Hayward, whether he's an all-star or whether he's a role player.
But
he makes
help.
Your team better.
He'd help.
He's one of your top six or seven guys that you want in a rotation in a playoff series. If you bring in OBJ, Allen Robbins, any of these guys, well, it takes a little pressure off N'Keal Harry. You don't have to fluff him up and say he was great. You can just say he's doing his job. And Julian Edelman may have a dinged up knee or a dinged up this, and that takes a little pressure off him to be the go-to guy, and you can manage him a little bit better. It's the domino effect of just bringing in a competitive body with a resume, with a respect level, other than, well, Gunner, we need you back off IR, or Demir Byrd, we need you to be more than you've ever really been in the NFL in your career.
Because wasn't one of the selling points on Mohamed Sanu at the time, and even though I rejected it, it was, well, he's got an extra year on his deal.
Like,
it was
we thought that was great.
So you get a half a year out of him, but guess what? You know, you add him to the receiver depth chart for next year. And so that's, again, something that they could do
for this season.
Or he sucks and you cut him.
Say bye-bye.
Well, and then what do you guys feel about that, where Curran says they have really gone after wide receivers, and for the most part, it hasn't worked. So would they be potentially gun-shy about trading a high draft pick for a receiver? Because
I could see it. I mean, I could see them saying, oof. You know, I mean,
not a good way to run your business.
No, that's a loser mentality.
Yeah, it is.
Absolute loser.
And it's easy for them to say, man, the Randy Moss thing worked great until it didn't work anymore. But it worked great.
So,
but some of the other ones.
But it's the opposite of what we always talk about, teams being afraid to trade with Belichick. Well, if I'm a GM, I need to have confidence. If I think I win this trade, I make this trade. I can't be. Remember, that was the talk with OBJ out of No, yeah, OBJ out of New York.
Yeah.
They found out the Patriots, and whoa, he's like, we can't do that. He's interested. No, if you think a first and a third or whatever is more valuable than your player, make the deal. Don't be scared. And I would say the same thing for Belichick. Okay, so N'Keal Harry may not work out. You went down this road at other positions. There was a while there you couldn't draft linebackers, and you could, and then you got Jerod Mayo, and everybody, oh, nice job. You got Jerod. What, are you just not going to have wide receivers? I give up. Nope. We're going to just run the
ball. Well, case in point, if they were really shy about, you know, mistakes from the past, they would not draft somebody from the secondary in the second round because they're like over there, and they did it again this year. So,
a good point. Yeah. It's a good point.
617-779-7937. We'll get right to the calls with you coming up next. We've also got our take that needs a 180. This one really needs a 180. Peter King joins us at 11:30. We've got a fantasy football segment at 11:45, and we'll pick the Thursday night game. It's Dale and Keefe with Andy Hart, Sports Radio WEEI.
More of Dale and Keefe with Andy Hart on WEEI.
Time for this week's Take That Needs a 180, brought to you by Awaken 180 Weight Loss. If you've recently begun struggling with your weight or have been for years, take control. Lose weight, then keep it off with the solution for weight loss, Awaken 180 Weight Loss. So, what's the old saying? Everybody has a plan until, you know, somebody punches you in the face.
Yeah, Mike Tyson.
Yeah. So everybody's got a plan or what they think is going to happen with Cam Newton as the quarterback of the Patriots. Wiggy, one game into Cam Newton's career, is basically, I think, ready to give him a lifetime deal.
He wants whatever it is. Blank check.
That might be worse than the Charlie Weiss thing at Notre Dame.
It might be. So Adam Lefko says he thinks he knows exactly what the Patriots should do with their new toy and quarterback, Cam Newton.
That was the Patriots further showing us that Cam is not their quarterback.
No,
they showed us he wasn't their quarterback by signing him to a one-year deal for $1 million. They're showing us now that, hey, we're not worried about long-term, that I still think Stidham could be the guy. But when you look at the Patriots' schedule these first few weeks, now they go to Seattle. In a few weeks, they go to Kansas City. What a better way to show one type of offense for the first 6 weeks and get everyone scheming, how do we stop this? And then you can switch it halfway through the year and go and not even have to put Stidham in that position.
Wow.
Woo!
So
basically what he's saying is you run the wheels off Cam Newton for the first 6 weeks or so.
Yeah.
And then you slip Jarrett Stidham out there, and he's throwing the hell out of the ball.
Treat him like a rental car. Gun it.
Is there any thought, I guess maybe not from this gentleman here, that...
No, there was no thought at all.
By the way, if you go to his Twitter bio, it starts out with NBA on TNT Tuesdays. Oh. I'm going to suggest maybe that's his strength.
Hoop guy. Yeah, it could be a hoop guy.
Shut up and dribble.
But what doesn't make sense to me is... The Patriots, as we know, are very scheme-oriented, and they can look different week to week, regardless of who the quarterback is. So you don't need to put in Jarrett Stidham to all of a sudden throw more or not run the quarterback 15 times. And I don't know how many times we've had to say this since Sunday afternoon, but when it's a lot of read option, it's not like Josh McDaniels said, all right, he's going to run the ball 15 times, guarantee he's going to get 15 carries. Like, there were some times where Miami was just taking away the running back, and Cam Newton read it a certain way and decided to run. So... He's not going to run it 15 times every single week. Like, that's not going to happen. And then when you put in Stidham, it's not like it's going to be this brand new, different offense that nobody's ever seen before.
And the hard sell is making Stidham the inactive third quarterback, right? No one will ever see it coming if you put in.
No, they'll never.
Right, now they went overboard.
Yeah, they really, really.
Just makes
two
healthy
sense.
Scratches on the whole
I mean,
team.
I know Glenn, at once upon a time, believed Stidham would start, then believed the platoon was not a silly idea.
No, I think the real... debate as it relates to Cam Newton is he a one-year Patriots quarterback? And I get and maybe
Stidham
they don't even
starting
know yet.
Quarterback next year.
Well, I don't think Stidham will ever start in the NFL.
Ever a single game?
No.
Oh well, a lot of guys start single games or
but
a couple games
you know
here
what?
Or there.
No, I don't.
Wow,
think so.
Go all in. I like I the, con- so. The
I
conviction there.
I don't think it's going to happen.
See, I don't even think it's just the is he a 1 year? Because I do think there's a chance he could be a multi-year guy if
so
he proves he can stay healthy. Looks, but the bigger question for the here and for the now is. Very easy when you never trail, when you control the game, when it's played on your terms, when you can run the ball, when you can only throw it 19 times. All very easy. Can he pass? Can he, and by extension, his weapons,
I was gonna say, and who's
go
gonna,
out?
Who, and, who's going to catch
Sunday
him?
Night, right. He's going to have to.
Because
they're
no going
to be chasing points Sunday.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And there's not a lot of games you're going to win in the NFL where you throw it 19 times. It's just not the reality of modern football.
Although
you're going to trail.
Patriots have lost some playoff games when their opponent has thrown the ball like five
times. Yeah. Yes. But at some point, he's going to have to throw it 35 or 40 times.
Yeah.
What happens? How does it look?
And who's it going to?
Yes.
See, I think there's more of a, yes, he physically can do that, but it is Nikhil Harry going to drop it? Or is he going to get it and then fumble it? Or is the tight end going to find a way to get open? Or, like, I'm more concerned about that than I am him. Not that he is this great precision passer. He never has been. He never will be.
Right.
But I think he can throw it. Like, he's probably, what would you say, for all the 32 starting quarterbacks in the league, just throwing it, is he top 20?
Oh, yeah.
I might have said top half.
Yeah.
Yeah, top 16 even. Okay. So, and yeah, I didn't, yeah.
And I don't know. The other problem with this whole idea, like, what is Jarrett Stidham? All the questions we ask about the Cam Newton passing attack, Jarrett Stidham would also have to overcome. And I have no idea if Jarrett Stidham can throw at an NFL level.
No,
can
he's
throw
the answer,
in an NFL game.
He's the answer to a trivia question. 10 years from now, who was the guy that replaced Brady? Oh, it's Cam Newton. Yeah, but for 3 months, who was the guy that we thought was going to replace him? Jarrett Stidham. What?
Never.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
I got his jersey.
Well, at the time when they only had Stidham and Hoyer as the quarterbacks on the roster, he was the guy.
He was the better option. You have to be honest.
Oh, of course he was.
Okay, he was the better option.
He was the better option, but I still didn't even think he was gonna be the guy.
617-779-7937. Brock's in Middleboro. Hey, Brock.
Hey, how's it going?
What's going on?
So I think we're seeing the same situation play out on two teams. Kemba Walker and Cam Newton are both replacing superstars. They're both lesser players, but they're a better fit for the current team.
Wow.
And I think they're a lot better morale, especially with the Patriots. I think that's going to be important because there's a good chance that they start the season 1-4 going into the bye week. But I think the parallels between the young Celtics and the young Patriots is
smart.
Pretty remarkable considering they're both from Carolina, too.
So you're comparing Tom Brady and Kyrie Irving.
You know, they crucified Martin Luther King.
Just in the sense
I get it.
They're superstars, but they weren't the right fit for the current situation. Tom Brady was amazing for the tenure he was here, but with the direction of the younger team, he wasn't the perfect fit.
Brock's 100% right. Kyrie Irving
is really good.
Kyrie Irving probably is a better NBA player right now than Tom Brady is a football player. What do you think? Like, if you were ranking him in the league. And trust me, I think Brady's going to have a monster season. I'm just saying, if you ranked everybody with Mahomes and Jackson and Wilson versus if Kyrie's healthy, he's a top 10, 15 player. So, yeah, obviously they've had different legacies. But he's right. Kemba is not as good as Kyrie. Cam's not as good as Brady. But maybe these teams with the surrounding supporting casts will go further with the two that are there.
Now,
like, I truly believe Tatum and Brown are better because of Kemba and not Kyrie. And maybe this offense, in de facto, you know, Sonny Michel maybe is better. Or James White maybe is better. Or the O-line, you know, just looks better because it's Cam instead of Tom.
It's also a harder sell with Kemba of late. The recency bias. His last couple performances have been hideous.
Stinks.
We may be talking about Cam and Kemba after Sunday night where Cam goes out and struggles against Seattle because they are trailing. They can't throw the football. This is the ultimate reaction week. And my guess is we're going to overreact next week. Dale's theory could come true. They're out there. They're chasing. They got to throw the ball over the field. It's not working. They're hitting Nikhil Harry in the hands, and he's dropping it. And they stink. Well, they're probably not as good as you thought on the first Monday of the year. They're not as bad as you think on the second Monday of the year, and we'll find the middle. But the comparison, can you imagine? We are now comparing. I mean, one of the great villains in Boston sports lately is Kyrie. He's hated.
But everybody,
and we're comparing him to Tom Brady?
Well, but that's because nobody debates Kyrie's talent, and that's all he's talking about. The talent is better. If you just said Kyrie Irving for Kemba Walker swap, you're like, oh, you got worse. But then when you factor in all of the other things, the intangibles, is corny.
But those are bad
is.
Things with Kyrie, so we're saying they're bad things with Brady?
You're trying too hard to debunk the theory. Nobody's suggesting Kyrie Irving is Tom Brady. Who's the greatest quarterback who ever lived? And Kyrie Irving ain't even close to being the greatest basketball player who ever lived.
No.
What we're talking about is a guy comes in and replaces a really, really good player. Tom Brady ain't what he used to be, but he's still really good. Somebody had to replace him.
Well, that's my point. Is 2019 Brady versus 2019 Kyrie Irving. As much as we hated Irving and what he said, still is a great player, maybe even a better player than Brady was. But just This Patriots team, would they score, or would they win more or less games with Brady, or is it close? Is it similar
this year? I'm on the record that Cam is the better quarterback this year because you're going to need to run. See, my point is you're connecting two guys, one who's a villain, one who's a hated, one I know people don't like, a cancer in the locker room.
Maybe Brady's a villain.
To Brady.
Is that what you're saying?
You're calling Brady a villain or, and I've said it, a negative drain emotionally on the team a year ago. It amazes me that we've gotten to that point, who was once the greatest winner, you know, the greatest worker.
He still is.
You know, when your quarterback is one of the guys. See, I think that's the change.
Yeah, he was.
I talked about this with Ryan the other day, Ryan Hannibal from WEI.com, that Tom, the legend was, he's just one of the guys. The legend was BS. Now you have a superstar quarterback that feels like one of the guys. It's the nicknames or the handshakes or
Doughboy.
David Andrews and the spike and the feeling they have together.
It's amazing. He's been here for a month.
Tom Brady was above the other 52, and everyone knew that.
Yeah.
Cam Newton maybe should be because he is also an MVP, and he went to a Super Bowl, and he's been around the league for a decade. But because he's new and because of his personality, he isn't. You're right. He could maybe sign a four-year extension, and then all of a sudden he's above. But right now, Cam Newton is one of the guys pounding fists and giving Nick that litany of nicknames that he went off of on the Greg Hill.
Oh, they all have handshakes.
He's one of the guys, even though he's a superstar. And to me, that's the change. And the comparison I would make, and it's a different situation, was the Drew to Brady one. Drew was the franchise quarterback. He was the number one overall. He was above the rest of the locker
contract.
Room. $100 million man.
Yeah.
And then
take a breath, Andy. We got to get a break in, bud.
Sorry.
We're not done yet. You know, this isn't the last segment of the show. 617-779-7937 is the telephone number. We'll turn our attention to the matchup on Sunday night. Dalen Keefe with Hart Sports. Dalen Keefe with Hart.